You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and each week I will bring you guests that can inspire, educate, and entertain while bringing answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. I will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, specialized programs, and many ways to keep your family mentally, physically, and spiritually sound. Now, having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. And I'll continue to bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, our guest today is Janet Farnsworth. Janet has been a part of the Alpine Academy team since 2003. Now, initially, she supervised several of the facilities, managing the residential staff and overseeing treatment of the girls. Over the years, as Alpine Academy has grown, she has served as the parent liaison, intake coordinator, assistant to the program director, and she has honored to assume the responsibilities of program director in 2006. Now, in 2011, in the midst of additional program expansion, she was asked to oversee outreach and development, including fundraising for the multi-million dollar fitness and arts center that was completed in 2012. To a woman who has worn many hats in this field of adolescent services, Janet, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you, Alan. It's an honor to be part of your show.
Well, I'm
and what a nice introduction.
You're very welcome, and it is well deserved. And I want to thank you for spending time with us and really just helping to get the word out. Now, one of the things that that I noticed, obviously, as we talked about your background a little bit, is you have dealt with young people at so many different levels, and really you got involved really at a hands-on level. So, I mean, one of the things that I'd like to first, have you discuss is, share with us what brought you to this helping field.
Well, I'll make it a short story, although it's a long one and a very personal one. I was working in corporate America and a brand new mom of a beautiful little girl, and really felt driven and drawn to finding a way that I could do work that was more meaningful than the work that I was doing, which was traveling around the country and setting up business meetings. And I read an ad in a newspaper in a little tiny town in Idaho while I was sitting at my desk, and my life changed from that moment forward. I just was immediately drawn to the story and the history of Utah Youth Village, which we're a part of, and responded to the ad. And so we began our career as house parents. We call them family teachers in a boys' home. But that's how my career dramatically shifted, literally almost overnight. Within 2 weeks of seeing that ad, we were packing up our little family and moving to Utah to start serving these very troubled boys.
Well, and the beautiful part about that is that I think there is so many people out there that, you get caught up in kind of the rat race of making a living or of corporate America, and to be able to have the opportunity to make a change like that and now know that, that you can give back,
right.
And I think that's the beautiful part of it. And it's one of the things that I love about this industry is there is so many people that are making their decisions based on what is good for the next generation. What can I do to give back? And again, it's a beautiful feeling to be around people like yourself that are doing that. So thank you.
You're welcome.
So now, describe a little bit about now of Alpine Academy and sort of how that came to be.
Sure. So we were founded as an agency way back in the late 60s, a really lovely woman named Lila saw a tremendous need in the state system in Utah for serving girls who would normally not be served in very ideal circumstances. And she came up with the idea clear back in the 60s that she wanted to create a home-like environment where girls who were in trouble, who had trouble with the law and emotional disturbance, where they could be served in a family-like environment. So then if you skip forward several generations, the village has been around a long time. In 2001, we decided to take what we knew worked very well and change the lives of troubled girls. We decided to take it to a national level. Up to that point, we had just been serving kids and families in the state of Utah. And so 2001, we opened the doors of Alpine Academy and began serving girls from all over the United States. These were girls that had significant emotional disturbance. And for us, it felt like just the exactly right place for a troubled girl to be. These girls had, you know, issues with hurting themselves and putting themselves in dangerous situations. They were avoiding attending school and had significant gaps in their learning. And for all of those reasons, we felt like a family-like environment would be a really safe, nurturing place for the healing process to start.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I had a chance to go over your website, and which, by the way, I want to tell everybody that's out there, feel free to open up another window. The website is www.alpineacademy.org. And if you want to open up that window, you can follow along with some of the things that we're talking about as we're talking about it. Now, as I was going through there, one of the things I noticed was psychoeducational treatment. Tell us a little bit about, you know, what it is and how does it work?
Sure. So we identified early on that we needed a well-researched, evidence-based treatment model as an approach for helping these kids. That, of course, first we built this foundation of a loving, nurturing, respectful environment, but then we needed a treatment model that we're could really help impact some of these really significant clinical issues that girls were dealing with. And the psychoeducational model really worked for us. It's an approach that marries cognitive behavioral therapy with skills development, and it requires that the residential staff or the direct line staff are very highly trained and closely supervised in using this model. In fact, to my knowledge, it's the only agency, we're the only agency, and this is the only type of model where practitioners actually become certified. So certified in the use and the application of this model. Things like, it starts with an assessment. So meeting a girl and her family and quickly doing a strengths assessment first to find out what are her hobbies and interests, what things is she already really good at, and then where are the skill deficits? Where are areas that with some skill development and some therapy at the same time, we could help her to be more successful in her life than she has been? And so that's the idea that marries those two words, psychoeducational. And it also comes from a foundational belief that all behaviors are learned and then all behaviors can be changed, and that we simply do the best we can to survive until we learn something better. One of my favorite sayings has always been from Maya Angelou, once you know better, you do better.
Yep. Yeah, you know, I was, and again, in going on the website, I was looking at some of the things, and some of the things I think are just, they're very basic, but at the same time, I think many parents out there who are dealing with their children are saying, well, that may be basic, but those are the things that we're dealing with. You know, that's the issues that we're looking at. I noticed, I mean, you had a list there of some of the things that are dealt with from the standpoint of positive correction activities and things just like following instructions and rules, you know, accepting decisions of others, accepting feedback, how to appropriately disagree. I mean, you know, again, you know, you would think, well, yeah, these things are pretty basic. But the reality is that I think that it is the things that a lot of us are having to deal with. So, yeah, I think that that's a real positive thing. And
great.
if we could focus more on those things, is that how can we approach these things that that all of us at some level are probably going through, but yet at the same time, there are positive ways to do it. So I think it's great that you guys are doing it that way.
Well, and that was the trick for us, is if you can identify and you just labeled what we call the four foundational skills, skills that we believe that every human being needs in order to move from surviving into being able to fully live and engage in society. And if you can learn those four skills, you think about your ability to interact in the workplace and at school with friends and with your family members, it just has a huge impact. And when you break the skills down that simply, it's really easy then to teach a young girl who's really struggled with even just being able to emotionally regulate the simple steps to how do I follow an instruction when I'm given it? How do I follow the rules that my parents have laid out for me? And because we are not emotionally attached and invested like the families are, for the first time oftentimes in years, we're able to have families experience success when those skills get used.
Yeah, and another thing I saw was that, one of the issues was appropriate boundaries. And,
Right. And again,
I think that it's such an important area because, again, when we're transporting, we're dealing with a lot of these kids that are going out to programs like yours and realizing some of them have no boundaries. I mean, they've learned no boundaries about what it is that they can say, what it is they can do. And it's important. I mean, that's one of the issues that all of us are going to have to learn at some point in time, or it's going to be very, very difficult to survive in this world.
Well, and you think especially for teenage girls, I'm the mom of two of them. It's such a critical foundational developmental skill that if you don't have appropriate boundaries, if you haven't learned to distinguish between, friends and strangers, if you haven't learned how to establish relationships that are healthy and appropriate and reciprocal, and if you don't learn that at a very early age, you unfortunately then set yourself up to have all sorts of significant issues. And so you're right, those boundary issues end up being a place where we spend a lot of time with teenage girls working on that. Also because, the research out there now that talks about brain chemistry has been so impactful in our treatment and helping us to understand the really impactful changes that happen when a young lady approaches puberty and all of the hormonal changes that happen. And if you don't have a pretty good sense of who you are and pretty good boundaries about friends and family and healthy relationships, being a teenage girl is a really tough place to be. And we see girls that have really created really dangerous and crisis situations for themselves just because they don't have good boundaries.
Yeah, and it has such close ties to self-esteem that once they realize that they're setting appropriate boundaries, all of a sudden the self-esteem is coming up because they're feeling so much better about themselves because they're exerting these boundaries and realizing that it's working.
Right, right.
Yeah. So now we kind of know how that works as regards to most people, but how does this type of educational approach, focusing on skills development, how does it help a girl that's dealing with a severe emotional disturbance?
Well, it's interesting because all of the girls that we work with are significantly emotionally impaired at the time that they arrive. They and their families have been in crisis, have been in and out of hospital, have attempted self-harm, and you wouldn't think, a logical person wouldn't think, well, let's start with some skills development and that would be a good place to start with a kid that's emotionally unstable. But in fact, the opposite is true. It's, I often call it smoke and mirrors, but to be able to, on a very simple level, start to work with a girl who has been so emotionally dysregulated and have her start to feel the seeds of success around, I can follow instructions. I can get up and function during the day and get the things done that I've been asked to do. I can learn how to disagree appropriately and express my feelings. Some of those very foundational skills, like you said earlier, start to help a girl who has struggled with identity and self-esteem helps her to feel confident, helps her to feel the first tastes of success, and in turn, her emotional stability improves. We see very quickly girls come to us in, obviously, in very sad shape. And within usually a couple of days, and at worst a couple of weeks, they have really learned to emotionally regulate and talk about what they need, talk about what they're feeling in really healthy and appropriate ways. And I think it's the skills development piece that helps them to do that, because it gives them a language to use as we start to teach them how to function in a more healthy way.
Well, now that which brings me to the thought is that, and you may have just described much of it, you know, what is the typical young lady that is a good fit for Alpine Academy?
I describe these girls as very clinically intense, inwardly hurting girls. You could probably, as you think about the people that are in your circle of influence, and I do the same in mine, think of girls that are fragile, emotionally wounded. They hurt inwardly instead of act out outwardly, typically. They struggle with anxiety and depression. They are emotionally dysregulated, where they're not able to manage even just, basic day-to-day life skills or functioning as far as getting up and getting through their day and getting to school, engaging with friends. Oftentimes they're isolative. Those are the typical kinds of girls that we serve. Also girls that have really struggled with healthy attachments, girls that have been adopted, girls that have been in significantly abusive situations, and so they mm-hmm. haven't learned healthy attachment and bonding.
Well, I've got an email coming across that I think is a question directed towards you just about the right fit. This one reads, a teacher friend forwarded your press release to me. Our 15-year-old daughter has gender issues as well as cutting school and running away for days at a time. I know we have to find a special school or program for her. Please ask your guest, should it be an all-girls school?
Good question. It's interesting to me that the gender identity question is a question that we get a lot from parents and professionals, and you can understand, for a girl who has struggled to develop healthy relationships and boundaries, gender identity issues actually come up more often than you'd think. And I carefully offer my recommendation, and that is, if this family has tried outpatient services and has exhausted resources in the community and really believes that there's a gender identity issue that is part of this young lady's treatment needs, my preference always is to serve these girls in an all-girl setting. It's oftentimes confusing, and again, I'll reference one of my favorite books. If you are a parent of a teenage girl, every parent ought to read the book. It's called The Female Brain. And in The Female Brain, it actually talks at great length about how we develop our sexual identity as part of healthy child development, and how it can get off track or miswired if we have experienced trauma or loss, or we haven't hit developmental milestones. Because then when the hormonal changes happen at the age of turning into a teenager, it just adds extra complication to that time that's already awfully difficult. But my preference would be typically that those girls are best served, at least initially, in a sex-specific treatment center, mm-hmm. Or a single-sex treatment center, and then you can explore the options once that issue has been kind of ferreted out completely.
Okay, that makes sense. And for the guys that are out there listening, I just wrote that down, the book, The Female Brain, because I don't think we have to be raising a daughter to maybe want to read that book.
Absolutely. In fact, I gave it to my husband for Christmas, who also has teenage girls but also has sons. I have said, not jokingly, that I wish that it was part of every junior high and high school curriculum. Dr. Brizendine wrote the book back in 2006, and she's actually written a follow-up book called The Male Brain, and Alan, you'd love that one too.
Okay.
She is a brilliant researcher. She's from California. She did her studies out in at Berkeley in Northern California, but she has written a book that makes brain science very approachable and readable and understandable for the layperson like me.
Well,
and so, like I said, I recommend it a lot.
I love the fact that you said that you've already given your husband the female brain.
I figured it would give him a tip about how to understand the inner workings.
Absolutely. And so, I mean, you know, we've now come up with the perfect anniversary gift. You know.
There you go.
You know, men, give her the male brain. Women, give
him the
female brain.
It's the perfect gift, and I promise you won't be offended. And if you read them both, you'll have insight that you just can't imagine. I tell you, when I read it the first time, it was like, oh, what a relief to understand some of the science behind some of the crazy things that happen to us as young ladies, and in my case, not so young ladies.
Well, I think it's great advice. Now let's go back a little bit again to Alpine.
Yes.
Again, for the parents, you know, that are out there, I mean, and I know that I get calls, I get texts, I get emails from parents, you know, they're very interested in, because, I mean, obviously this is the most valuable thing in their life is their child, and they're making this decision. So let's talk a little bit about, the system, you know, that in this case their daughter is going to go through, sort of walk them through what a daily activity is, explain a little bit about the token system and things of that, so they know, you know, you're going to paint a picture that with words that's going to allow them to understand what their daughter would be going through.
Sure. I'll give a little snapshot of a day in the life. And first I'll paint the picture that'll give you an overview. If any of your viewers happen to be on our website, you can see some snapshots that are actually a day in the life. But we have created an environment that is meant to feel as close as it can be recreated to a family style environment. So We reside on a big, beautiful ranch just west of Salt Lake City on 40 acres with horses and beautiful scenery all surrounding us. Our property backs up right onto the Ochre Mountains, and so it's a beautiful, calm, quiet place. But more than that, the family-style model that we have employed as the foundation of treatment allows that each girl is going to live in a pseudo family. So we hire and train behavioral specialists that actually live and work in each of these six residences. And so a day in the life looks in some ways very much like it would look at your home. The girls eat meals together. The couple that lives in each house is responsible for planning a menu with them and going shopping with them, and they have breakfast and dinner together every day. They have lunch at school, of course, and so they get up in the morning. They have a simple daily chore that they're responsible for. They have breakfast together, and then the girls all head off to school, which our school building is located in the center of our campus, and school day feels very much like a traditional school day from 8 o'clock to about 2:45 every day. The girls are in class, and they are experiencing, on a very small scale, a reintegration into school life, which is important. For many of these girls, they have, because of the level of distress they've been under, they have kind of checked themselves out of school. So school from 8 to 2:45, mm-hmm. and then groups in the afternoon. The girls all get back, head home, and enjoy dinner with the girls that they live with and the couple that they live with. Evening looks a lot like it probably does at most families' houses, you know, dinner, study hour, time to enjoy some hobbies or free time activities, going for a walk, going for a horseback ride, bedtime usually by about 9 o'clock, and they get up and do it all again the next day.
So how does this sort of family-like environment fit into the success of your treatment, the various, you know, methodologies that they go through?
Sure. So that family style treatment is the foundation of what we do, and it is coupled with intensive clinical and psychiatric services and very specialized supportive academic services. So we talk about our multidisciplinary approach a lot, the foundation of which is that model that I just described, that family style, safe, nurturing, loving environment creates creates a safe place where intense and often traumatic and difficult things can then be addressed. And I don't want to oversimplify it, but to say, I mean, imagine a girl who has struggled all of her life with chronic depression and anxiety to be served in an environment that feels like home, even though it's not, and to recreate relationships that are key, both friendships with the girls that she lives with and parental-like relationships, adult relationships with her teachers and her therapist and her family teachers, starts to help her to experience again what it's, you know, what we would call kind of a normal day in the life for a teenager. And that foundation then allows for great clinical work to happen and intensive academic regrouping to happen. Oftentimes our girls really need lots of academic supports because they've gotten off track and have been off track for a long periods of time, and so their academic gaps are large.
Well, we are speaking with Janet Farnsworth. She is the program director for Alpine Academy. Stay with us. And again, as I said earlier, if you go to www.alpineacademy.org, you can follow along on your computer. And we will be right back in about 1 minute.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. Our guest today is Janet Farnsworth, Program Director of Alpine Academy. And during the commercial, we got a message, an instant message that has come across that I think sort of looks, I'm trying to read it at the same time, it's sort of the opposite, I think, environment that what we're talking about, because you're talking about this very family-oriented environment. So if I can read this, I believe that they would like a comment. This one reads, it says, 2 years ago, my brother sent his daughter to a therapeutic program that he was told by the referring counselors would be the best choice for her particular condition. And it says depression and cutting. Mm-hmm. It was 6 months before they would allow us to visit her. And when we walked through the doors, it was the most sterile and institutional environment you could imagine. Nothing about the people or the place was warm or comforting, much less therapeutic. I recommended he pull her out and find another place, but they convinced him to give it more time. After many thousands of dollars spent on her treatment, she returned home, and it was like she had never left, still in the same negative patterns. We are all devastated. I personally believe, especially after reading your site, so she's now obviously has gone to the site as we recommended, that parents must look at the environment as a huge factor in the outcomes as well as the families involved. I would like you to expand on this if you would.
Sure. I have a couple of thoughts. First, my heart goes out to that family I can't imagine to be the parent of somebody, of a young lady who's struggling so significantly with chronic depression and is acting that out in a way that's causing harm to her body. It's a scary, scary place to be in. Unfortunately, we get to work with lots of families who are in that same place. A couple of things jumped out to me from her comments, and one of them was the sterile environment and the lack of contact. And so I want to speak specifically to how we really address the family as a whole and family involvement as a huge part of what we do. Especially for a teenage girl to be away from home, there has to be some significant things going on in my mind for that to be necessary. And obviously families in these places have exhausted all of the resources from outpatient treatment and psychiatric services to need this level of care. And for us, and I can just, we are part of a national organization called NATSAP, the National Association of Therapeutic and Schools and Programs. But for, I can speak to Alpine specific, the family involvement is critical to the work that we do with these girls. So I'm a little bit concerned to hear a statement like we weren't able to have contact with her for 6 months. In our case, that just would never happen. We have families come on the day of intake, and they are involved at least three times a week via phone or Skype, conference calls, not just for therapy, but also just to check in and continue to build relationships. We also set aside a weekend a month and ask families to come as often as they can. We don't expect that families will travel. They can travel that often, but they're certainly welcome to be on site with us and working with their daughter. Home visits is another way that we keep families connected. And then little things that I think matter to moms and dads, celebrating special events with them. We oftentimes have as many families visiting us as we have kids going home for the big holidays, you know, Thanksgiving and Hanukkah and Christmas, because we want to really reinforce how important those family systems are and how important each family's traditions are. And in that way, we also then get to help families identify and then address the areas in their family systems that aren't working, because in truth, for a girl to be struggling that significantly, there are things that are happening in her family that could and should change that will help support her in a healthier way.
Yes. I could not agree more on that point. I was reading it, I was kind of getting a feeling also, and I don't know if this is the issue, but I know that with some families, they go with a decision that appears to be more of a hospital setting because that's what their insurance offers. You know, and again, yeah. I don't know if that's the situation here. Can you touch a little bit on you know, conversion of benefits, you know, where at times that can be changed and not to feel like that's your only option?
Well, absolutely, and I think there are significant enough times and for short periods of times that an emergency hospitalization and an inpatient hospitalization type of service is necessary. But there are a number of options that are equal in their ability to manage and monitor and keep safe a child while she's getting stable around these issues and are not at the price tag that would be incurred when you're talking about psychiatric hospitalization. To place a child in a residential treatment center, for instance, you are your child will receive psychiatric services, clinical services, around-the-clock supervision, nursing services, medical attention, and all of those things have a much smaller price tag than inpatient hospitalization. Now, I say that, and then I also say there are absolutely times when it is necessary and safe and prudent for a child to be hospitalized temporarily until she can become stable. In fact, we have a, as part of our program, our psychiatrists all work up at the University of Utah, which is the nearest hospital to us. As psychiatric, they oversee the psychiatric inpatient unit. And so I feel like we have the benefit of, you know, top-notch psychiatric doctors and services, but we provide that service in a setting that doesn't feel institutional and cold. I think the other thing, too, I just want to address the warmth piece. And again, oftentimes for safety, certain luxuries, if you will, or comforts have to be removed. But we have found lots of creative ways that you can still have a very warm, nurturing, loving environment and be safe. You know, Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the things that we're allowed to do in a family style environment. Our facilities, although you know we have a multidisciplinary approach and an intensive clinical approach, it feels very much like a home that you'd find in a community in your neighborhood.
Yep. And when I brought up the point about conversion of benefits, and again for this person who sent this comment, and thank you so much for taking the time to do that, is that you know, give an example. In November, I had a family. We located a runaway, and the parents, I said, you need to have a plan. So I connected them with an educational consultant who then began helping them to find an appropriate program. Well, they came back to me and said, well, our insurance company says that they're not going to pay for that. And mm-hmm. the only thing that they're going to pay for is in hospitalization care.
Right.
And what I advised them was to contact the insurance company and use the term conversion of benefits, and said what you want to tell them is that, you know, if you do that, the hospital setting, you know, they had $100,000 max for psychiatric per year, and I said advise them that, you know, between now and the end of the year, there's a good chance that the hospital can run up $100,000 worth of bill.
Right.
You know,
easily.
In a matter of, it was about 6 weeks or so. And I said, now, and then the year will start, and that hospital can now start working on that next 100,000. So,
right.
You know, in a matter of 12 to 14 weeks, you can go through $200,000, Mr. Insurance Company, or.
Right.
You can discuss conversion of benefits, which means we as the parent will sign something saying if we can send our child to this program that a very well-respected educational consultant has recommended as being the best place for our child, we will sign something that says, you know, we will only, you know, we won't make any other claim, that we'll do whatever it costs here for the end of this year, which whatever it was going to be, and then next year it won't even be $100,000 for the whole year.
Right.
And
right.
So look, insurance company, you get a chance to do the right thing and spend less of your money.
Right.
You know, so.
That's brilliant. Yeah, that's brilliant advice. And in fact, there's a company that we recommend families use often. You can find them on the web. They're called Denials Management. You can find them at denialsmanagement.com, but they, for a very nominal fee, will help families pursue non-traditional options for getting their kids services, because you're absolutely right. It's really ridiculous the way that healthcare works in our country, and you know, we pay premiums and we have insurance, but we can't use our insurance benefits in times of crisis like these. Just makes no sense. And in truth, like you said, through conversion of benefits, through single case agreements with your provider, and if you just have somebody tenacious working, helping you navigate the system, you can get services through your insurance provider, and you should be able to. That's what you're paying for.
Exactly. Yeah, and again, and I'm not saying this meaning that, you know, all the insurance companies are bad. It's the fact that they have somebody who is being paid to sit at that desk and to go through a list and saying, it says here, this is what I can offer you.
Right.
You know, that's their level of training at that point. And sometimes you just have to get to somebody at a higher level that can make a decision beyond that.
Right. Right. You're absolutely right. And this is such a great resource that you're offering families. And just to put that information out there, because I can't tell you how many hundreds and hundreds of families that we get on the phone or in our offices who just don't have a clue about where even to start. You talked earlier about, you know, do you have a plan for what you're going to do next? And oftentimes families don't know even what the options are. And so all of this information, I hope, will be really helpful to families who are in crisis.
Well, absolutely, and I appreciate you giving us this denial management company, because I'm going to be contacting them as well, because it sounds like they should be on the show as well.
you'd love to have her on. I've never met somebody who's so excited about talking about insurance. You'll love her.
Good. I look forward to it. So as we have about 10 more minutes, let's talk about involving the family. I think that's about where we were headed anyway. And I know that I was smiling. I was smiling as you were saying that, because it was obvious from the comment that this listener sent us that, you know, apparently, you know, it was an aunt that sent this in. But the fact that the aunt wasn't given contact for 6 months, you know, I could see that was pushing one of your buttons. So
absolutely.
let's talk about how your therapeutic approach involves each girl's family in the healing process.
For sure. It starts initially with each girl's parents, and we have a very systematic approach to addressing family issues. And it starts first with her parents. We recognize that a parent is a child's first and best teacher, and that those relationships have to be strong and foundational. You learn a lot about how to be as a person and how to interact in the world by the relationships that you have with your mom and your dad, and so we start there. We intentionally don't have a no-contact period like what was just described, but rather we focus on with lots of contact, both in family therapy and in just incidental phone calls, which happen, like I said, a couple of times a week. We hope to help the family to quickly discover where are the areas that we do really well as a family, and let's identify some things that we'd like to improve. And at the same time that we're intensively helping their daughter make shifts and gain insight on a very separate level, but obviously interrelated, we are working with the parents to identify where are the areas that we can improve? What are some tools that we maybe didn't have before, we didn't know how to use before, that will help us to be more successful in parenting our child? And that starts from day one. And then once we've got a solid family relationship established between parents and daughters, then that family plan extends to siblings and extended family. Mm-hmm. Because again, we want these young ladies to go home and back into the environments that they came from well prepared, and the family well prepared and well informed for what comes next. You know, how do we resolve conflicts? How do we talk about some of these really tough issues that are going to come up as parents of a teenage daughter? And we help the families to navigate that while their daughter's with us, so that it's not a big, scary, taboo thing.
Mm-hmm. And while you're telling me that, I'm thinking about many of the young people that we transport. There's a statement that we get from many of them where they'll go, "You don't understand. You're transporting the wrong person. I come from a dysfunctional family. You're transporting the wrong person." And our answer is, you know what? That's the beauty of the program that you're going to. They can help you in being raised in a dysfunctional family if that's the case.
Right.
So again, when we add the little part on the end, because it isn't that we're buying into it, but we're not discounting it either. It's interesting that so many, and especially ones that have been through maybe some local treatment or whatever, you know, they're starting to use buzzwords, you know.
Right. So, they fully realize that they aren't the only ones that have problems.
Exactly.
And I think if we're honest with ourselves, again, I can be brutally honest. As a parent of three teenagers, two girls and a boy, I wish that I did it right every time. And you would think that I know better. But the truth is, we just do the best that we can do.
Yep.
And parents need resources just as much as kids do.
Yep.
And I think if we can sometimes I call it leveling the playing field, but if we can just be brutally honest with ourselves and hold ourselves as parents accountable mm-hmm. for that we have helped to create the situation that we're in, then we can be part of the solution. And I think the difficulty that we ever run into is if we have times when parents can't identify that they play a role. Doesn't mean that they're completely complicit, doesn't mean that they're completely at fault, but all of us play a role in family relationships. We each play a part, and we need to each take accountability. And if we can do that, then we have seen miraculous things happen with families. Can I tell one story?
Absolutely.
It's the first one that comes to mind, but it really brings home this family piece. So we had a young lady who had struggled with anxiety and depression for years. Starting in middle school, about seventh grade, she came to us as a 16-year-old She discovered somewhere along the way that she could manage her anxiety and depression in unhealthy ways by drinking and smoking marijuana, and so that had been her coping skill for years. And she'd stolen from her parents to do it and snuck away to do it, but it was a really big issue for her as a sophomore in high school. In one of the very first family workshops that we did, her dad sat in a workshop with us and said, "I've just now realized how I'm contributing to this issue for my daughter, and today I make the commitment that I will no longer use alcohol or cigarettes in our home, and that's how I will support her sobriety." And from that day forward, he committed to a sober life so that she could live in a sober environment. And she still, we're in touch with her. This was many years ago. She's probably 23 or 24 now. It is the single most impactful factor that she identifies as the change agent for her in her life. When she realized that her dad would make that sort of sacrifice and had that sort of understanding and accountability, everything changed for her, and everything changed for her whole family. It was the start of something really great for their family.
Well, and that's a great story for all of us. It just reminds all of us that we are still modeling. Whatever it is that we do, we are still modeling for them. And so that's great. I appreciate that. Now, as we're running a little bit short of time, tell me a little bit about how you measure success with each girl and her family.
Sure. Well, we measure it a couple of ways, and we do it in the very traditional ways. So we track things like, is this girl able to maintain at home? Is she still successful at home 6 months and a year after? Is she attending school? If it's appropriate, does she have a job? And what are her grades in school? So we measure some of those kind of very traditional benchmarks. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, we have always found it really beneficial to measure success individually and personally for each child. And so not only to know, are they thriving at home? But then some of the personal details, you know, so for a child, and I think of one very specific young lady who had begun learning to self-soothe by self-harming when she was a very young girl, like about 6 or 7. Mm-hmm. Her success now is measured in the number of days that she goes without self-harming. And it's interesting. I stay in touch with her by phone and on Facebook, and oftentimes she will just send me a message via Facebook that has the number of days as a countdown to her choice to be healthy and find other ways to get her needs met. So some of the ways that we measure success are very personal, and we have an alumni event every year, and parents often will say, from going from a place where I believed I didn't know that my daughter would see her 15th birthday to now she's 18 and 19 and enrolling in college, those are successful moments for families.
Well, and those are the moments for us in this industry that keeps us going too, is, you know, that kind
Amen.
Of feedback, you know, that just, it, you know, that's why we do what we do. Now, we just have a couple of minutes. What advice do you have for parents of teenage girls?
Oh, I could give a long list. I'll give a couple of sound bites, and then we'll let it be at that. The first one I say to parents of teenage kids, teenage girls specifically, moms and dads, pay attention. Pay really close attention to what's happening on a day-to-day basis. Girls are emotional creatures, and they typically wear their emotions on their sleeves and in their outward behaviors. And so pay attention and notice subtle changes and talk about those changes. Mm. And then the other thing I say to parents of teenagers, me being one of them, I have to tell myself this regularly, don't avoid being a parent in favor of keeping the peace. Oftentimes, teenage girls are dealing with difficult issues, and sometimes it would be a lot easier just to turn the other cheek and ignore the subtle signs that you're seeing of that are concerning, you know, a concerning friend or missing a curfew. Don't avoid those parenting moments in order to keep the peace.
Yeah, go ahead. No, I was going to say, I want to add a little bit to that one that I use with parents as well, is that you know, our 15-year-old teenager doesn't need a 45-year-old best friend.
Amen. They don't need you. They don't need a friend. They absolutely need a parent that's gonna model and hold them accountable and teach them the things that they need to know to be successful young adults.
Yeah. So, thank you so much, Janet. The time has flown by. I really appreciate you, what you're doing out there, but also giving the time to share this information with everybody.
I'm happy to do it. Thank you so much for inviting us to be a part of your show.
All right. Safe travels. And again, for everybody out there, be with us next week as we continue to provide answers for the family. Bye now.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.